somebody came into a house in Texas with a shotgun. The young girl called 911 and nobody picked up the phone. Believe it or not, early in my career, frighteningly, I was responsible for 911. I was young. I had hair.
This is the Helpful Podcast, where accomplished people tell us who helped them. Rob Kennedy, our next guest, asked us not to help like mobsters. Also, at some point, he was literally responsible for people's lives. He's a prolific operator, founder, and podcaster. And here's Rob's tale of human helpfulness.
Hey, Rob.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for hopping on.
I'm wearing headphones and you're not wearing headphones. So I
mean, like I got these little things.
Oh, there you go.
That's okay. Just for me to hear, but like they're the mic.
Yes.
So I'm testing out equipment for quality. I'm pretty sure everybody does the first time until they're just like pro and there's just like mics hanging in there.
You need big fat headphones. That means you're a pro podcaster. The bigger the headphones, the more professional you are.
So it runs the same with the gaming, right? So
yes,
like if you're a pro streamer, pro podcaster. Yeah. I mean, I'll update the system as we go along. But I'm excited to have you on. You've been a great friend for
great
so long. And Rob, would love you to tell us about yourself and talk about like how we met, when we met, anything you might remember.
Would you put it that way? Yeah. So I've been doing the tech startup thing since in between times that it was cool. So I've run venture-backed and bootstrapped tech companies. For those who are listening and not watching, I'm a bald white guy, so that should be obvious. And I was a developer. I did product management, and then I did sales. I, for the last 7 years, was running a services company that we sold to Deloitte a couple of years ago. And what I do now is I advise entrepreneurs in building startups and the growth and strategy and product side. I also, about, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, that long ago, started podcasting myself. So I had a show called Entrepreneurs in Small Rooms Drinking Coffee, which is around the time we met, I think. And then from that, I also started a show with Betakit, which is a tech publication where we talk about technology as it affects Canadians and Canadian tech companies every week. Still do that. And every once in a while, do product stuff. So that's my jam. And how we met, oh boy, I guess this was in the mid-teens. Oh gosh, was it like in the, God, was it in the aughts? No, it was in the teens.
I think so.
I think it was in the teens.
Yeah.
And where there was a vibrant tech scene in Toronto that continued to grow pre-Shopify IPO, if I'm not mistaken. That's how we marked time in Canada. And yeah, you and I had met at a sort of shockingly at a tech social event, I believe, down in the tech sector of, you know, the beating heart of the tech community in Toronto. I think it was an accelerator event or something like that, or yet another co-working space that was new. And then you had an illustrious product career ever since.
I remember we talked about a bunch of different companies that we both knew.
Yeah.
And lessons learned and what to do, what not to do.
And yet we still made all of those mistakes ourselves.
And a bunch of them we keep making.
Yeah.
I'm talking about myself.
Me too, but continue to make them today.
I love it. So Rob, I'd love to hear about a time that either you were dealing with a very hard problem that you didn't exactly know what the path forward looks like, or you were surprised by how someone's help improved your life in a way that you actually couldn't fully fathom before.
Oh, so many. I think that the trouble with that question for me, at least, is I have never fallen down a well and somebody's like lowered a bucket down and saved me. So I've not had that sort of inflection point that sends my life right, not left, or given me a kidney. So for me, what I found is, so I've ruined the premise of your show. I hope that's okay. I think that where you're going is that like what you find is that if you are helpful in life, I think that reciprocates back to you, and in not obvious ways and not always direct ways, but it can be pretty direct. And I mean, I'm not talking about like mobsters where it's like, I'm going to do you a favor and one day I'm going to call you back. One situation that comes to mind, I guess the most dramatic situation that I have in my life that I can think of is, believe it or not, early in my career, frighteningly, I was responsible for 911 at Bell Canada, which is our incumbent phone company. We spun up a voice over IP service to compete with Vonage. And I was consulting to them and I was young, I had hair. And they're like, you look young. You're responsible for the emergency calls. I'm like, what? So it scared the crap out of me because the idea of somebody living or dying based on what I didn't know at the time scared me a lot. And so the way Bell worked is I was representing the phone company. We were building this new product and we worked with partners. And one of the partners was CGI, which is a large Canadian consulting firm based out of Montreal. They do tons of big honk and big work, big systems, big old systems. And Bell's consulting partner was them. And so we, the Bell folks, sometimes when you're working in technology companies, it's easy to blame the software people, especially when you have toxicity between the business side of the business and the technology side of the business. If things go bad when they start blaming each other. Those business guys don't know what they're doing. And the business guys are like, oh, those tech guys, gals don't know what they're doing. That's not a good relationship to have. And so CGI would often get the blame for everything, rightly or wrongly, from the Bell people, because it's just easier for your career. And so what happened was the CRTC one day, this is so off track, but it's very interesting for the nerds out there. In about 2004 or three, Vonage was a new service. And what happened was somebody dialed 911 in the States. And because they didn't know what to do with 911 calls in those days, they routed it to an administrative line. So you call 911, you're on Vonage, it would go somewhere and somebody would have to pick up the phone, like a secretary or something. And of course, in the middle of the night, there was no secretary. So it ended up this young girl, somebody came into a house in Texas with a shotgun and started shooting up the place. The young girl called 911 and nobody picked up the phone because it wasn't real 911. So we had a solution that was pretty interesting at the time. And the CRTC pretty quickly said, hold on a second. CRTC, for those Americans who are listening, is the regulatory body that regulates the phone companies and the radio and television and all that other stuff. And now online digital content creators, according to the latest law. And they said, hey, listen, we don't care how hard it is, but when you dial 911, someone has to pick up the phone and somebody who has to route to the nearest person who can help the person who's called 911. So we had a slightly better solution than what was designed, but it wasn't infallible. And the CRTC's law was, it had to be infallible. I'm like, well, God, what the hell? So all the Canadian telcos that did VoIP at the time, which is three, because we have an oligopoly, got together. And when you dial 911 on a VoIP service in Canada, it would go to a group that would answer the phone. And then they would say, where are you? And you tell them where you are. And then they would route you to the local 911 dispatcher that would actually dispatch the thing. So hopefully you weren't choking to death or being murdered because you wouldn't be able to answer that question. Well, what did that mean? We had to deploy 911 updates to the phone system in the middle of the night when people are least likely to call 911. And so I had to work with the CGI team to actually deploy the code that was written to route the calls to this interstitial answering service. And it was unsexy. Nobody really wanted to do the work. And also it was, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And you go through a very long script to make sure that the thing you deployed didn't destroy everything else, not just 911, but the rest of the phone service. And what I found was that everyone treated the CGI folks like, well, I shouldn't say everyone. It was easy to treat the CGI folks like garbage. So no one was ever helpful. And I found that treating people like garbage was not the way that I wanted to operate, not the way that I thought would be the way to operate human beings. Look, that's not the world that I wanted to live in. And so when we got on the call to deploy this scary, don't break the internet, don't break people's lives 911 code, I had to sign off on it because I was representing the phone company, but I wasn't just about to sit there and pick my nose and wait for them to do this stuff. I was like, what do you need me to do? Do you want me to do test calls? It's been a while since I've been a developer. Do you want me to push code? What do you want me to do? And so we worked collaboratively. I helped them as much as I could and didn't act as the customer, the angry, angry customer. And we got it done. And as far as I know, nobody died. But interestingly, stayed in touch with that, the two folks, one in particular. And we got along just fine because I didn't treat him like garbage. And then it ended up, flash forward 10 years, 15 years, that gentleman, I ended up working for a company called TWG, a services company based in Toronto, building technology products for big and small companies. And this person ended up becoming a vice president of innovation at Interac. And we're like, hey, you're doing cool stuff. I'm doing cool stuff. Let's talk. And 15 years later, we ended up working together again. This time, he was the customer and I was the vendor. And we started a long and fruitful relationship between TWG and Interac, partially because I didn't treat him like garbage. I offered to help. And because of that, we're still friends to this day. And we did a lot of really interesting stuff with Interac.
That's brilliant. This is the karma boomerang. You sent it and it came back.
15 years later, but it came back. I mean, that's just that's a big long arc of it. And I don't think I wasn't expecting, I had no idea. I think that you'll also find that the world is very small, especially in the industry that you happen to be in. Tech is one, but the world is very small and you see the same people over and over again. And so even out of selfish fake altruism if you're a sociopath or a psychopath and you think it's going to come back. You can just do it for those reasons. But I think that if you're genuine in your support, that I wouldn't expect it. But I've seen examples of that over and over again. And that's just one that kind of cropped to mind when we started talking.
I love it. What other industries do you think run on relationships or helpfulness? And the more helpful the folks, the better they end up doing in those industries.
I don't think that there's an industry that doesn't. I think that's the human condition, which is that we're social animals and we are designed to help each other. That's the way we can build planes. No one person can build a plane. It requires everyone to build a plane. It helps that you pay them to pay attention to it, because then they wouldn't really pay attention to it. But I think that you find as you get older, you start to think about your legacy as well, no matter what industry you're in. And you're like, well, people took a chance on me. Because I think you'll find, and I've said this many times on many shows and not shows, I think most people don't know what the hell they're doing in any industry. And I think you get over imposter syndrome when you realize, not that you figured it out, but that nobody else knows what they're doing either. And so there's few things you have figured out in life. If you turn around and can be helpful to stop people from making those mistakes, or at least to try to stop them, because I still think that they have to go through the pain of making those decisions themselves. But if you can minimize the stress and pain of it, I think that it's a good feeling. And I think that draws you closer to the people around you. Even if you're antisocial, I think we all, at the end of the day, especially after COVID, we rely on each other for big and small things. And so it doesn't even just have to be industry-based. I think it's, you know, you're going through a tough time in life, and if people are able or willing to help you, has nothing to do with industry, because I think you would reciprocate if you're a good person, or even if you're not. I think we're just designed to do that.
This reminds me of a couple of sayings. One is, okay, we're all children playing adults.
Yeah.
None of us know exactly what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And our happiness comes through others. Like, we can reach Zen, we can reach contentedness internally, but our actual euphoric happiness always comes through others.
Yeah. And I think just to reflect slightly further on the second point, the problem with the term happiness, and specifically with euphoria, there is a finite affinitude to it, which is like, there's a hedonistic aspect to it where I think there's a dopamine hit when you help somebody. But I think that we're all searching for meaning. And I think the longer term satisfaction, not happiness, and I'm not sure that's necessarily what you meant, but I'm parsing it in an unfair way, where it's like, what's the point of all of this? And I think you get more life satisfaction if you're chasing something beyond the dopamine hit and actually trying to create a world around you. I mean, like, look, if you think about it, if you have kids at some point in your life, you're not controlling them in any particular way. You're guiding them based on what you think is right and teaching them. And I think you're being helpful, but not directive, or you are starting directive, but eventually you're helpful with them. And that's the best you can do. That's the most impact you can create in the universe. So I think, like, having that mindset creates the most meaning beyond your existence. And it's a longer term impact than just, did I make you happy today? Because then there's like, I mean, we're still talking after almost at this point, almost a decade. And it wasn't because we didn't become friends based on like one quick dopamine hit and then we never talked again. There's that sort of reciprocity that built up over time, I think, where like you get to know who the human is and then the helpfulness goes in both directions. It's a little too philosophical, but.
I love it. I love it. I eat this stuff up.
All right.
Well, one thing that is always stuck in my mind, when you're helping, you're giving your time away.
Yeah.
It's the most precious resource. It's the only scarce resource. Everything else, there's more of it somewhere else. So how do you decide who to help, how to help, with what, why?
Well, it's whatever pays the most is what I find the easiest way to. It is the ultimate question, right? To your point, it's the thing we have the least of. And I think, like, you know, we've talked about it before, which is as you gain wealth, you spend more time doing the things that you want to do and less of the things that you don't. So we've talked about it before. Like, if you're rich, the reason you take a helicopter isn't because it's cool. It's because, although it might be cool, it's because it minimizes the transit time between the things that you don't want to do, unless you really enjoy helicopter rides and then you just go on helicopter rides. But you get to do the things that you want to do. So, like, actively being able to choose what you do with your time is a luxury that you know, we've only really as a species been able to enact at large in the last maybe 100 years, 50 years. And so that's a luxury. And then how you spend that time, it's a really good question. I think it has something to do with, I think it's, you know, ultimately we all make decisions and then wrap rationality around those decisions, shown scientifically to that to be the case. However, I think it's a sum of, can I help this person? Like, am I capable of doing the help? If somebody comes to me and they're like, hey, I like this, this is a terrible example, but I'm like, my boat motor isn't running. I'm like, I can't help you. I would chop my hand off and it would be a bigger problem. Maybe I can find somebody who can. But it's like knowing where you can help and how you can help. So being able to help, do you like, is there some relationship with that person that you feel like, you know, you can add value to? Like, and then I think it's also something I've been struck by that I don't have a really good answer, and I'm getting older, where I found that I'm overly helpful to my own detriment. I'm like, is this like, oh, what's that? You need me to do something for? I'll totally do that for you, random person that I've met three times. And I'm like, why am I doing this? Why am I just met this person. I'm like, why am I being helpful? But I like to be helpful. And I think that it caused me, and I don't have a good answer here, but it causes me to reflect on, you know, when am I doing a disservice to myself? And when do you put other people's needs ahead of yours? And when do you put your needs ahead of other people? And I think there's no clear answer to that. I think you just need to be able to sort of take a step back and every once in a while and get out of your own, you know, day to day and be like, am I putting my life together in a way where I'm actually creating an impact, or am I literally just doing things for other people and it's coming to my detriment? So I don't have a really good answer, but I think it's a combination of like, can I help? Do I generally like this person? I mean, if it's a person crossing the street, it doesn't really matter because it's a one-off gig. But if it's like, I feel like I can actually create some sort of impact and I sort of want to spend time with that person, you know, and then of course there's the dopamine hit. And sometimes it's like, hey, do I learn something from this experience? Like sometimes it's fun to do things because you just learn. Yeah. So there's no really good answer, but that's the sum of all the bad answers.
Could it be that you don't actually have like a mental model about who to help? Like, I hate saying this, but like, is the vibe thing?
Yeah. Could that's what I'm saying. I think that ultimately it comes down to vibe. I really think it's down to vibe. It's like, how am I feeling today? Do I want to look this person in the eye? And do I like, you know, can I come up with an excuse that'll make me want to help a person? It's really what it really comes down to, right? Like sometimes you're on the way home and you know, I have to get home, the baby needs feeding or whatever. And that person looks like they need help crossing the street. And I'm like, well, who's going to punch me in the face more, the baby or the guy crossing the street, you know? But yeah, no, I don't think there's a formula around it. I just think you have to be, this is a lesson I've learned late and I don't have a good answer for. You have to be mindful of how you spend your time and how you divide it up. And I don't have a good definition for what helpful is other than vibe. And what I've said to you is a deconstruction, a rationalization of the vibe.
I love it. I love how it's ended up being like, it's a vibe.
It's a vibe. Everything's just a vibe. That's how the world works. It's a vibe.
I love it. Rob, thanks a lot. This is brilliant. Pleasure.
No problem. And tell me all the hate mail you receive that
I'm just going to forward it to you. Yeah, I'll just send a mail forwarding for like everything to come out.
With the F word.
So thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate
it. I'm glad I could be helpful.
You're the best.
Thank you.
We'll chat soon. Bye.
See you.